Departments of Justice settlement agreement was adopted. I am sorry for my part in failing to achieve more of the reforms set in the settlement agreement. I apologise for not succeeding in improving community trust in the police bureau, which is one of the goals I stated in my 2012 election campaign. I worked hard for the past 4 years, but we haven't yet reached those goals. I apologise to every Portlander who has experienced disparate treatment from police officers since the settlement agreement was approved. I'm grateful that Portland voters re-elected me this past May. I pledge to work even harder to collaborate with people of colour, people experiencing mental illness or other disabilities, and everyone who cares about this problem to implement changes that will make us all safer. Surely we can all agree that what we want at the end of each day is for everyone to be safe and warm in their home, whether we're talking about individuals in daily activities in our communities or about our police officers returning to their families at the end of each shift. This week, a person living outside in Seattle was killed by a police officer in the midst of a knife fight with another tent resident. And also this week, a police officer who had recently returned to work after maternity leave to nurture her first child was killed during a welfare check in Palm Springs. Surely we can all agree that these deaths are tragic. Surely we can all agree that killing a human being, whether a community member or a public safety officer, is wrong. We must keep striving for change. For me, and I know for many of our community partners, there is no alternative. We will not stop working for justice until there is justice for all. I am grateful to the hundreds of Portlanders who have attended countless meetings of the Community Oversight Advisory Board, the Citizen Review Committee, discussions on independent police review, and other similar gatherings. Thank you to everyone who has attended a Black Lives Matter or Don't Shoot Portland rally. Thank you to the people who are protesting here today. I thank everyone who took time to come to City Hall and the other places we've held meetings to share your concerns and advice. Thank you also to everyone who has called, written letters, sent personal emails, or even signed petitions. Thank you especially to the leaders of the Albino Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. Dr. Bethel, Dr. Haynes, Joanne Hardesty, Dan Handelman, and others have been working for change in police policies for decades. Racism runs deep in our city's history and in our present. The Albino Ministerial Alliance has showed dignified leadership, continuously advocating for justice over decades and generations. The pastors model how to disagree without being disagreeable. Ms. Hardesty, as the chair of the NAACP in Portland, has been a leader throughout our state, in the legislature and locally. You speak your truth, and you hold me and other elected officials accountable for results. Thank you. I also thank Debbie Iona of the League of Women Voters Portland, and Darlene Lemley, Carol Krishman, and other League members who have attended countless meetings and sent numerous thoughtful letters on police accountability. TJ Browning, Rochelle Silva, and many others join the ranks of white allies who have volunteered on boards and commission and in community processes as advocates for accountability. I have read all your memoranda. I respect your integrity. I thank you for educating me. I must also acknowledge Teresa Rayford. I first met Teresa when she was running for my seat on the City Council in 2012. Portland has failed Teresa and her family over and over, but Teresa has not given up on Portland. In 1981, which is not that long for somebody of my age, not that long ago, Portland police officers threw dead possums on the steps of the Burger Barn, her grandfather's business. The officers who did that vile act were reinstated by an arbitrator after Commissioner Charles Jordan fired them. Teresa's nephew and cousin died by gunfire on Portland Street. I'll say it again, Portland has failed Teresa over and over, but Teresa has not given up on Portland. She was arrested and went to trial for disorderly conduct at a Don't Shoot Portland rally, and she was vindicated. She won one back. She doesn't abide by the rules for community engagement. This sentence that I wrote at 3 o'clock this morning does not make sense, so I'll skip it. Teresa, I will forever remember your testimony on the council agenda item reviewing the purchase of a bridge crane. You conveyed the sorrows and hopes of many Black Portlanders in the few minutes you were given to speak on that topic, tying in public process with community advocacy. You are a warrior for justice, a leader for our community, especially for younger Portlanders and communities of colour. Thank you for continuing to insist on the pursuit of justice. Obviously, the easiest path for me today would be to vote no. I received dozens of emails, letters and phone calls urging me to wait to let the new mayor address the contract. Many of the people who I respect most in the entire world, as well as in Portland, have contacted me urging me not to ratify the contract. I agree, way too many Portlanders have died in incidents involving the police bureau. Both white people, including James Chassie, and people of colour such as Keep Notice, Kendrick James, Jose Mayor Poot, and others. Every life ending in gunfire is tragic, and many are avoidable. This is something, some of what I've heard in hearings and what I've read in written testimony. Many people are concerned about the draft policy on body camera use by officers, which was posted with the union contract. Let's be very clear. The union contract is silent on the issue of body cameras. There is nothing in the contract on body cameras. The council has not yet voted to purchase any body cameras. We directed the police bureau to research the issue and to return to a full council hearing before proceeding to purchase any cameras. Mayor Hales's amendment to this ordinance is crystal clear that the draft body camera policy will be reviewed and amended by a stakeholder committee. Then it will return to council for a full public hearing where amendments will be considered. Mayor Hales's amendment states that the city council will decide on the body camera policy, not the chief of police, Portland Police Association, or the mayor alone. What is on the table is the Portland Police Association's agreement not to open the entire contract to bargain on the body camera policy. That is a huge win if we ratify the proposed contract today. Obviously, the most crucial issue in this debate is the use of deadly force policy. The union has agreed that revisions to this policy will be determined by the United States Department of Justice. And at last, the 48-hour waiting period before an officer may be interviewed in connection with a community member being killed by a police officer is deleted from the contract. This policy has been condemned since the turn of the century. Countless groups and individuals have railed against it, and it obviously needs to go. This contract deletes it. I commend Mayor Hales for achieving what other mayors have tried and failed to win in union bargaining agreements. Some community members have said that the deletion of the 48-hour rule is meaningless if other protections for officers remain in place. Nothing in the ordinance before us today dilutes the authority to interview officers involved in deadly force incidents immediately if warranted. Some community advocates have voiced concern that an officer could delay giving a statement until he or she reviews the body camera evidence. That is simply not true. And again, the body camera policy will come back to council per the mayor's amendment. The rules on reviewing data, including audio and video evidence, is subject to Department of Justice review under the settlement agreement. Another concern I heard is that there are no standards for which officers are allowed to come back to work part-time as retirees. The contract states that the chief has absolute discretion on who to hire back and who should not be allowed to re-enter the workforce. I find it unbelievable that any chief appointed by the mayor as the commissioner in charge of the bureau would invite criticism by hiring back officers who are not trusted by the community. Rehiring of retirees should be at the discretion of the chief, and it is. I've met with police chiefs regularly since I took office in 2009. Community members may consider both the council and the police bureau out of touch with community concerns, but I can't believe that any mayor would allow the police chief to rehire officers known to be despised by the community. Excuse me, I'm still going.
It's fine.
Community member, I've already said that bit. In Yorkshire, England, where I grew up, there is a saying, why borrow trouble? Bureau directors, including police chiefs, are hired for their connection to all of our communities in Portland. While I understand community concerns about retiring retirees, I don't believe that concern is enough to compel me to vote against the package. Another concern I recognise is the assertion that the contract doesn't go far enough to mandate disciplinary action when officers act contrary to city policy. The union has agreed to withdraw 11 grievances that have been filed and are pending decisions. Withdrawing those grievances means the union is accepting the Bureau's clear and objective discipline guide, which mandates actions in relation to offensive. The use of the discipline guide has resulted in stiffer penalties for infractions than the previous benchmark of past practice. Since Mayor Hales took office, 12 officers have been terminated or resigned in lieu of termination. Officers who resign under pressure of discipline or who are fired in response to their actions lose their accreditation. They can't work as police officers anywhere in Oregon. And in the cases where the arbitrator has ruled that the city must continue to employ an officer who the chief and the mayor have fired, those officers are now assigned to work where they will never interact with the community on the streets. The acceptance of the discipline guide by the union is a significant win for our community and the police commissioner, Mayor Hales. And the discipline guide is not part of the contract. If the police chief, mayor, council, or community members want to change it, that can be done administratively rather than being bargained in contract negotiations. Arbitrators have ruled in favor of the Portland Police Association's contract multiple times on multiple issues. Many community members recognize this and would like to see the contract changed to send conflicts to the Civil Service Board rather than the arbitration process. I share that desire. This is one issue on which I agree we didn't get everything that we wanted. Should we reject the whole package due to not prevailing on that issue? In union negotiations, the final decisions are never all on one side or the other. The final package before the council today reflects that reality. The agreement recognizes that changes to the independent review, police review process and citizens review committee's hearings to consider appeals to the IPR are pending. It recognizes the role of the U.S. Department of Justice on those processes. It continues to recognize that I agree with community concerns about this section of the contract, and I will continue to advocate to address those concerns when the independently elected city auditor decides to move forward with her reform package. I don't see a compelling argument to delay contract ratification on that issue. So in summary, there are several sections of the contract in which I share community concerns. There are several sections of the tentative agreement on which I believe community concerns are misinformed. And there are some where I believe the contract addresses the concerns and give the council and the community long-held wins. So the question I've asked myself over the past month is, why do this now? Why not support the position of community advocates who unite in asking the council to delay their decision on the contract till Mayor Wheeler takes the leadership helm of our city? So the core question is, what is the cost of voting to approve this contract or not? And I'm not talking about the cost in dollars. Council was clear this spring when Mayor Hales proposed the surcharge on the business income tax to pay for the 4% raises for all officers. And along with other commissioners, I assessed the monetary bill of over $9 million in ongoing resources too high when we weren't also buying changes to the contract. Now, the bill is around $6 million, with significant concessions from the police union on crucial issues such as I've just described. We are buying the elimination of the 48-hour rule, agreement that the body camera policy and other Department of Justice mandated reforms are not subject to bargaining, and dismissal of 11 grievances, some of which could cost the city millions if arbitration rules in the union's favor. But this is about more than the dollars and the contract and the ordinance language. Local activists have seized on the contract as an issue that relates to the broader community concern about justice in relation to police officers' actions in our city. The fundamental question is, what are the costs for our community in either accepting or rejecting this package? Not the dollar costs, but the people costs. Who will suffer if this contract is not ratified today? The answer I see is the people who suffer will be the same communities that good-hearted, earnest advocates seek to protect, lower-income communities and communities of color. The cost of delay will be impacts to neighborhoods struggling to reduce gang violence and human trafficking, neighborhoods desperate for community policing with officers on walking beats to forge connections with people living outside and with young adult panhandlers, people wrestling with drug and alcohol addictions, and residents and employers just trying to get through each day with the safety net of police officers responding to 911 calls within minutes of the report being called in. For every report about officer-community interaction gone bad, there are hundreds or thousands of responses where police officers provide vital services to Portlanders who are crime victims, to people experiencing mental illnesses, including people threatening to kill themselves and or others due to suicidal thoughts. We need Portland police officers to have capacity to report to traffic caches, domestic violence calls, human trafficking, and many routine calls. The contract addresses those needs by providing the incentives for recruitment. This is a we issue, a we opportunity, rather than an us and them framing. What should we agree on as issues and goals that we all unite in caring about. This is an opportunity for collective ownership of reform in the police bureau and in our city. We must listen to the collective voices of our community and seek to find common ground, common goals, common agreements on strategies that will promote reform within our police. We need to have some incentives for new recruits to come to the bureau, for new idealistic young people who share all values-driven Portlanders' desire to support a police bureau that reflects both the vision and the demographics of our communities. The Albina Ministerial Alliance, the NAACP, mental health care advocates, the League of Women Voters, and many individual and group share a long history of advocating on police reform. I have listened to the collective and individual voices from the community advising me on this boat, and I agree, Portland City Government does need to put our own house in order. And still, I refuse to stay stuck in an adversarial position. I was elected with public campaign financing. I was a community activist for 15 years before I began to aspire to elected office. As a city commissioner, I own the responsibility to acknowledge the problems and find solutions. Police services should be about we and not us and them. We all own our own part in making that value the new reality in Portland. So considering all of that, today I'm voting based on the cost of delay and the cost of ratification, the people costs, the community safety costs, the long-term public good costs. Of the two choices, approve or reject, in my assessment, the cost of delay is more compelling and daunting. We already have 65 vacancies in the police bureau, with 21 more officers due to retire just this month. If we don't ratify the contract with its agreement on recruitment incentives, we will likely be short 150 officers by the end of the fiscal year next June. It is a sad fact that we are not allowed to give recruitment and entry-level benefits without the consent of the union in opening the contract and agreeing to the package of pay raises for all officers. I am a proud dues-paying union member of the Oregon Nurses Association still. I understand why union contracts matter and why workers deserve due process when bargaining on contracts. In return for the investments we will be making in the Portland Police Association union contract, we are buying very significant concessions, deleting the 48-hour rule, dismissing 11 grievances, and setting parameters for compliance with the Department of Justice settlement agreement. Thank you to the bargaining skills of Human Resources Director Anna Kanwit, with the support of Mayor Hales, for achieving these improvements. I've visited 30 of Portland's 95 neighborhoods in the past couple of months, giving information about how the ballot measures we'll vote on in November affect Portlanders. Everywhere I go, community members are asking why their neighborhood doesn't get needed police attention. In Selwood last week, a woman walked out with me after the meeting to tell me that her son-in-law is working so many overtimes in the police bureau, he barely sees his family. It is not safe for police officers to continue to work so many hours. The chance that officers will make a terrible decision in the use of deadly force increases when they're exhausted from working too many hours. I know I was a registered nurse before I got elected to the county. I know I was less safe in my work environment when I was sleep-deprived and stressed out. That reality is one of the true costs of the question on whether to delay or implement this contract. I want every neighbour in Portland to receive prompt attention when they call 911, requesting intervention by a police officer. I want every officer working in our community to promote community safety and to eliminate all disparate actions related to people of color, people experiencing mental health illnesses, people who can't find shelter, and all the others who are disadvantaged due to the City of Portland's past and present actions. I recognize that on this vote, I'm saying no to almost everyone who has contacted me on this issue and people that I love and value as my core supporters. Eleanor Roosevelt also said, "Do what you believe in your heart is right, for you will be criticized anyway." Having considered all input, I believe in my heart that this vote is right. Aye.
fish.
Mayor Hales, at a moment like this, politicians usually say something like, that's a tough act to follow. I'll simply say it's an honor to follow Commissioner Fritz. And to state my comments for the record. And because of the circumstances in which we find ourselves today, I have posted my statement on my website for those that would like to read along. And I will read it because I took time to craft these words and I want to get it right. Colleagues, let's start with something we can all agree on this morning. One of our core responsibilities is to provide adequate funding for fire and police. The community expects nothing less. And let me be clear about my values. The important work of police reform and accountability is essential to maintaining public trust and is a core responsibility of this council. The people we serve expect us to invest in public safety. What does that mean? It means a prompt response to a 911 call, a firefighter and an ambulance when needed, and a personal relationship with a cop,
yes,
which is the heart of community policing. And that explains why, during good times and bad, this council has worked hard to protect public safety from budget cuts. The debate over this proposed police contract has been charged.
Yes.
And I've spent a lot of time listening to testimony, reading emails, and getting input from trusted friends and community leaders like Avell Gordley, Dr. T. Allen Bethel, and Speaker Tina Kotek. They remind me that there is history in our community to be accounted for. There are lingering trust issues, and there are unfulfilled promises of justice and reform. During my service on this council, I have been proud to support important reforms and accountability measures. This includes the Department of Justice settlement, the discipline of officers who have engaged in misconduct, a new police training facility, and proposals to reform the independent police review process. Not long ago, I spent the night on patrol with officers from the gang enforcement unit. I saw firsthand their professionalism and dedication. They did the right thing under very difficult circumstances. But they can't do their job if we don't support them. The challenge before us is a staffing shortage that is reaching crisis proportions. 911 response times are now 6 minutes or longer, putting all Portlanders at risk. Chief Marshman reports that officers cannot follow up on some 911 calls, such as thefts with no suspects, because they are responding to 35% more calls than 4 years ago. We have a shortage of 65 officers and 20 more vacancies to come this month, and the trend only gets worse. Over the next 5 years, the Police Bureau anticipates nearly 400 retirements. To address this problem, there are proposals on the table to cannibalize specialty units like gang enforcement and domestic violence reduction unit to get more officers on the streets. This would do violence to the spirit and the letter of community policing. It's unacceptable to me and to the people who depend on these important services. The proposed contract isn't perfect, but as Commissioner Fritz notes, it makes progress in a number of key areas, addressing the acute staffing shortage, making Portland police salaries more competitive to help us recruit and retain qualified officers, advancing our reform agenda by removing the 48-hour rule, affirming the city's right to discipline officers who engage in misconduct. The proposed agreement is also significant for what is not in it. As the mayor's amendment makes clear, it does not establish a policy on body cameras, which must be negotiated separately and then brought back to council for a public hearing and vote. Three final observations. First, I have reviewed Ted Wheeler's 10-point plan for police reform. This contract addresses a number of the concerns he raises, while other issues can be addressed through council or executive action. Second, if we are to make this investment in new officers and retaining experienced officers, we must seize this moment to advance our equity and diversity goals. At my request, the mayor has pledged to hold a work session in November to outline his plan and Chief Marshman's plan for making our police force more representative of the people they serve. And finally, some have questioned the cost of this agreement. I am more concerned about the cost of doing nothing. The alternative to approving this contract is unacceptable to me. It could be years before we get a new contract. The 48-hour rule would still be in effect, and there's no guarantee that we'll get a better deal in the future. I know that my vote today will disappoint some in our community. However, leaders are called upon to make the best decisions consistent with their values. This proposed contract supports two of my top priorities, supporting police reform and investing in public safety. I vote aye.
Hales?
I have only a little to add to these eloquent statements that we've just heard from Commissioners Fritz and Fish about this contract, so I won't spend a lot of time on the substance of this. But first, on the larger agenda, we have work to do in police reform in our city. We have made progress, and I am very proud of that progress, but we still have work to do. And as we've heard from my colleagues today, there's a commitment by the leadership of this city, by the Portland Police Bureau, and by the community to carry on that work. Secondly, we've seen real gains in the police bureau's understanding of and dealing with very difficult situations on the street. Our use of force is down significantly. And as I say all the time, I get reports every night of our police officers de-escalating situations that perhaps in the past would have involved force, and tragically in other cities today is involving force in appalling and unacceptable ways, with loss of life that should never happen. And I'm really proud of those reports I get day after day, week after week, of de-escalation of crisis in our community. Don't take my word for it. A neighbor of mine, Mary Nichols, went on a ride-along recently, and being particularly adept at social media, she posted an account of that ride-along and even some video of the experience, including de-escalating a situation involving domestic violence that, frankly, I was amazed that they managed to de-escalate. And some 50,000 people have already seen Mary's post, and I hope everybody in Portland sees it. So that account affirms what I'm seeing as the police commissioner in the progress that we're making. There's much more to do, and I remain committed. I know this council remains committed to the Department of Justice settlement, the spirit and the letter, and doing better than the letter in how we actually operate as a police bureau. Finally, I want to thank my colleagues because, as we all know, but I think not everyone understands in the community, we have a series of executive sessions in which the council gives direction to our bargaining team when we're doing union contracts. And this council was clear about how much we could afford to do and no more, and our goals in terms of things like the 48-hour rule that had to be included in this package. So I know that put our bargaining team and ultimately me when I went to the Portland Police Association Executive Board and said, take this contract because this is as good as it will get in terms of what your goals are and includes everything that we must have in terms of ours. And to their credit, they did accept that proposition and they've ratified this agreement. So finally, I just want to, again, thank some people. Anna Canwit is away, but she and her team at the Bureau of Human Resources have worked really hard to get us to this day, and I appreciate that good work. Our city attorney's office, Mark Amberg, is here. They have worked really hard to get us to that point. Our professionals in the police bureau and those two agencies have served the city council very well in getting to an agreement that is good for Portland. Aye. Let's take a brief recess for comfort's sake and come back at 11:30. Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you, Amanda.
Hi, this is Mike. Hello?
Let's take up item number 1127, which is the approval of findings.
1127. Appeal of Portsmouth Neighborhood Association against hearing officer's decision to approve the application of Bridge Meadows for a conditional use and adjustment with conditions for New Meadows, a proposed group living facility at 8710 North Dana Avenue, LU 15273480 CUAD.
Good morning. There's a button on the base of that microphone. There you go.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, council members. Thank you. So you should have before you the revised findings for the New Meadows group living facility. Just a quick reminder, we first heard this on September 14th. Council did take a tentative vote to basically deny the appeal from the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association and uphold the hearings officer's decision with a couple of minor modifications to conditions of approval related to the parking lot and the good neighbor agreement. And council instructed Bureau of Development Services staff to basically incorporate that into the findings and bring that back to you. So the findings you have are those do incorporate council's deliberation, and basically we're looking for a motion to accept those findings and to accept the final decision of approval on this case.
So moved.
Okay. Any discussion? I assume the parties are fine with the findings as you've proposed them?
They are, yes.
Okay, then a roll call vote to accept the findings, please.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you if you work on this. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move to perhaps you want to do the pulled consent item first and then move on to the...
Yes, we can do that. Item 1128, the pulled item?
Yeah, so let's do 1128. I think someone asked that this be pulled.
Mr. Lightning did.
Okay, let's take that item then, please.
Okay. Reappoint George Fetzer to the River Community Advisory Committee for a term to expire May 21, 2019.
Okay, so we'll just pause for a minute so Mr. Lightning can be brought up to the chamber. Probably we'll take a break at 12:30, maybe. Does that sound good? See how it goes.
We do.
We have the Vision Zero action plan this afternoon.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So both times certain, 2 o'clock for the scheduling item and 3 o'clock for Vision Zero. So it would be a good idea to try to get the morning calendar done if we can this morning, but we will see if we manage that.
Should I come back?
Yeah, coming back at 2 might.
Oh, we could come back at 2:30.
We could do the time certains first and then the rest of the morning calendar, too. That's the other option.
Well, we probably should take the testimony
for
people who signed up on the
only
plan.
Right. Well, are there people here that you think
that's
are...
That's what Carla said.
People signed up on that.
Mayor, it's my understanding Mr. Lightning is not available or cannot find him.
Okay, then we'll go ahead and take a motion, please, on the report.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call on 1128.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, I understand we have some invited testimony, or at least neighborhood activist testimony that you want to make sure we hear. Is that right? So let's return at least momentarily to item 1126 and take, I think it's the first person signed up.
Joanne Reese Lukens.
Okay, so we'll pause and let
do you want the other names upstairs. Also? Just okay.
She might just be right outside.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Is she around though? Yeah. Okay.
Good. Good morning. Welcome. Just come have a seat, and just there's a button on the base of that microphone that you just need to push to make it active. And thanks for your patience, and appreciate you being here.
My name is Joanne Reese Lucchini. Our family lives in Lentz, and we are taxpayers and voters. I have some concerns about ONI's Housing Emergency Community Engagement Plan, and I'm trying to be proactive. My first concern is how much of the $350,000 will be used to alleviate the sufferings of those most impacted by the housing crisis versus how much will be spent on overhead among the participating agencies. Why is ONI undertaking this, despite the City Budget Office analysis advising that there are already established outreach and public engagement efforts, primarily facilitated through the Housing Bureau? My second concern is, will the community engagement be meaningful, inclusive, and equitable? I see no mention of neighbor engagement in the plan, yet the neighbors are the ones who will be expected to coexist peaceably and equitably. Neighbors are everyone who contribute to the fabric of the community. In Lentz, our neighbors are housed and unhoused, renters, homeowners, and campers, poor, and working class. Lentz is a diverse community where everyone coexists, yet the city consistently and consciously failed to acknowledge this the past year. The city chose to see the struggle of the diverse housed and the diverse unhoused as separate struggles. Policies seem to be directed at divide and conquer, where the diverse poor, and working class housed were pitted against the diverse poor and working poor unhoused to everyone's detriment. My third concern is, will the community be respectfully listened to and heard, or will the engagement remain lip service and participation remain tokenized? Lentz experience this past year has been that, whether housed or unhoused, concerns were ignored or dismissed if they didn't match the city's agenda. No matter who protested, housed or unhoused, or about what, human rights, health, safety, safe space, quiet enjoyment, the message was clear: they don't really care about us. When a Lentz resident dared to suggest that wealthier neighborhoods should also bear the responsibility for caring for the unhoused, a city employee used a misogynistic, oppressive epithet to describe him on social media, and the city has yet to issue an apology. In closing, in the spirit of participatory democracy, since the neighborhood associations were asked by the mayor's office for the neighbor's opinion, I would also like to remind that adding more police does not negate the need for police accountability, and would also respectfully request that City Council delay the approval of the Portland police contract till Mayor Wheeler takes office. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. If you'd like to stop into the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Brian Hoop is the person who's worked on this, and I think he can answer most of your questions.
Yeah, but I thought it was very ironic that as a community member, I had to wait to speak, but yet the agencies were allowed to speak ahead of me. And that's very indicative of what I was sort of saying in my statement as well, too, that the agencies, some of which, I hate to say it, are poverty pimps, are actually more important than myself. I was here at 8:30 this morning, froze my patootie outside for half an hour before the doors were opened. I've been waiting patiently to testify, and yet the agencies got in ahead of me. I did it all on my own nickel and my own clock. Everybody else was getting paid a salary in order to show up, and I find it incredibly disrespectful.
Appreciate that.
I apologize for that, and thank you for your engagement.
Thank you very much. Okay, I think Commissioner Fritz, you wanted to continue that item a week and take the rest of the testimony then?
Yes. And given the number of items that we have less to do, some of them which are going to require votes today, I'd prefer to carry it over to next week.
I'm sorry, I didn't put that microphone back on. We'll carry that item over until next week, and anyone who signed up to speak on that item can do so then. Okay, let's move on then to the regular agenda, right? Take 1140.
Authorized purchase of replacement police patrol vehicles at $3,243,864.
Without objection, I'm going to return that item to my office until next week. Thank you. Okay, 1141.
Oh, authorize water revenue bonds to finance water system additions and improvements, and to refund water revenue bonds.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, just push the button on the base of the...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Eric Johansson, City Debt Manager. The ordinance before you this morning is a non-emergency ordinance, and it accomplishes two purposes. First is it authorizes the funding of up to $93 million in new money water projects, and this $93 million is expected to fund a portion of the Bureau's capital project for the next 15 to 18 months. Secondly, the ordinance authorizes the refinancing of outstanding water revenue bonds for the purpose of realizing debt service savings. We currently expect that we'll refund approximately $85 million of outstanding bonds and will realize about $9 million in present value debt service savings. This is subject to market conditions, so it could be up or down from that, but that's where we think it is right now. Lastly, the ordinance authorizes certain amendments to our first lien water revenue bond ordinance to provide greater flexibility with respect to the funding of debt service reserves and the treatment of operating expenses. With the issuance of these bonds, we'll have sufficient bondholder consents to proceed with those amendments, and we expect they'll take effect upon the closing of the 2016 bonds. Our expectation is that we will sell the bond through competitive bidding in early December, with closing in mid-December. We'll be requesting a rating on the issue from Moody's. The Bureau's first lien bonds are currently rated AAA by Moody's. Questions?
Mr. Johansson, one of the benchmarks set by the Independent Budget Office for the Water Bureau is to maintain its AAA credit rating. And it is one of a handful of public utilities in the country that has a AAA credit rating. This is the second presentation we've had in about a month where we've talked about refinancing bonds and realizing savings for taxpayers. We had a conversation involving the Bureau of Environmental Services and now the Water Bureau. Now, you've identified about $9 million in savings from the refinancing. What is the impact of a AAA credit rating on those savings?
Certainly results in greater amount of savings. The higher the rating, the lower interest rate investors will be willing to take. In rough terms, for every $100 million of bonds that we issue, having a AAA rating versus, say, a AA2 rating is worth about $3.2 million over 20 years. So that's kind of a standard way of measuring the benefit of the AAA rating relative to a more typical rating on a revenue bond.
Yeah, I think it's important because we talk at budget time about, you know, maintaining a AAA credit rating, and what does that mean when rating agencies give us a AAA credit rating. But here's an example where we're taking advantage of historically low interest rates, and the city's credit rating allows us to get the most favorable rates, and that means we can borrow money and save at lower rates and save ratepayers the cost that would otherwise be there. So I think that's something worth noting.
Yep, definitely.
For Eric. Thank you very much. Okay, signed up to speak on this item.
I'll see what the sign-up sheets are. One moment.
Okay.
So you guys good with soldiering on for another half hour or so here? Mm-hmm.
No, actually, it's short of that. It's a resolution calling on employers to evaluate their own scheduling practices and see if there are ways they can make them more predictable for workers.
And we'll deal with the other issue later.
Yeah, I will make a statement that I do hope that the legislature will take action, but we'll be able to take action ourselves. But the resolution is calling on employers, and we're going to hear what employers like to say.
Okay. Actually, let's, Carl's not here. I was going to say we could do the second reading items, get them out of the way, but we'll do that later. Okay, but you called the names in chambers? Okay.
Okay. Do at least two or three. I'll call the three names and they'll hold them at the door. Okay, the first three people to testify on item 1141, the water revenue bonds, are David Davis, Robert West, and Cecile Evans.
Okay.
They'll be followed by, I believe it's Angela Warner, maybe? Ashley Langsdorf, and Gregory McKelvey.
Okay, thank you. Find anybody? Okay. Well, I think if it's called in council chambers, then they'll have a chance to come up here. And if they're not in council chambers, then we'll have to hear from them another time. So okay. I think you've called the first three names. Let's call the second three names, please.
Second three were Angela Luan or Warren, Ashley Langsdorf, and Gregory McKelvey.
Okay.
And they're followed by Amelia Young, Catherine Moore, and Frank Martinez.
Okay, thank you. See if any of those folks are here. Okay, let's call the next three, please.
Are the artists Vanderlyn, I think it's Stu Stewart, and Jesse Sponberg.
Okay.